You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, here to close out another wonderful week of The Daily Traditionalist. And I'm very excited to be joined by my good friend and comrade, Asmodor, who we had on earlier in the week and filled in for me that one day I wasn't able to make it for the show. So, many thanks to him, and not only for filling in and being here with us at The Daily Traditionalist, but for all the work that he does for the pro-white, the nationalist cause. So, Asmodor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot of things going on right now, and I wanted to kind of talk about something, because when people talk about working within the establishment, Paul Ryan has just come out saying that he and the GOP will sue Donald Trump, if he becomes president, over his proposed ban of Muslims coming into the United States. And of course, everyone's pointed out, even leftists, that under the laws established by our nation, that a president can stop any class or group of people that he feels is counter to the best interests of the United States. You know, we stopped Japanese and Italian and German immigration during the Second World War and previously. We had the Chinese Exclusion Act when cheap Chinese labor was undercutting American labor on the West Coast. I mean, this is something that isn't totally out of left field. So I want your thoughts on the fact that, so many people I talk to within the nationalist cause say, we just need to get in the Republican Party, we need to burrow into the Republican Party, and we can make some changes. But to me, I mean, Donald Trump being a self-financed billionaire who's outside the party establishment, his own party that he's the presumptive nominee, seems to want to do everything they can to do the bidding and the will of the left. And even if you're a billionaire, you're dealing with a multi-billion dollar political party with connections to all the globalists and internationalists and things like that. So first of all, I want to know your thoughts on Speaker Ryan saying these comments, what that means for the U.S. election, but also your thoughts on a deeper thing of can we work within institutions that from literally the top down are corrupt? Because guys like Paul Ryan were the compromise with the so-called more radical Tea Party wing of the Republican Party for the neocons and the big banker interests and things like that. And even he's turning against Trump in a measure that most Republican voters support. So what are your thoughts on the possible implications of this?
Well, first of all, Paul Ryan is one of the most anti-white cucks in Congress, Republican or Democrat. It doesn't matter whether you're trying to destroy us openly through mass immigration and social welfare programs from everybody all over the world, or if you're trying to do it for the Chamber of Commerce and the big corporations in the name of free trade and cheap labor. But suing the president over the immigration thing, that's kind of ridiculous, since it's actually if I'm not mistaken, it's a power granted in the Constitution. And when you have a clearly delegated power like that, I think he would have sovereign immunity. That's what the first court that it went to would say. But I don't know. You can't trust him to do anything that he says anyway. He went on O'Reilly last night and lied. I mean, there are articles all over. There's a one on Breitbart I read this morning. He went on there and just straight up lied, claiming that he passed a bill or floated a bill, whatever, that would have ended all this Somali immigration to Minnesota. And, it took the fact checkers about 5 minutes. No, he didn't. He floated a bill that would have brought more of them in here. He got one passed that's going to pay for all these Syrians and Iraqis. And there was another bill that they completely got out that was actually a Democrat-sponsored bill that would have required a little bit more checking on these people and smaller numbers and that kind of thing. But this I don't know where they're going, at least the GOP, with this narrative about the Muslims. It's all part and parcel of this weird thing that has happened to evangelicals, where, you know, they're embracing all the things that liberals embraced a generation ago, and no telling what their kids are going to be apologizing for on their behalf. You know what I mean? If it keeps going that way. But it's all part of this secular religion that we have here, of freedom of religion, and the whole civic nationalism thing, where if they just arrive on our shore and they get their toes nice and deep in this dirt here, that they'll become American as Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and all that. It boggles the mind, really.
Well, it's like tag, you know, like if you can make it to base, it doesn't matter what happens, you know, you're safe. So that seems to be the immigration policy. It's just everyone, no matter if their visa overstays, if they're going across the southern border, if they're being brought here as refugees, whatever it is that bring people here, as soon as they can make it to base, as soon as they can put their hand on it, then it's game over. We can't touch them, you know. And there's something that boggles my mind when you think about Paul Ryan. If he cares about, you know, immigration and following the law, this, of course, what Donald Trump has proposed is constitutional. I don't think even the left would argue that. They might hate it. They might disagree with it. But that's not really the point when it comes to constitutional law. But how many times has the GOP establishment sued Barack Obama for telling the Border Patrol to stand down? How many times have they sued him over Fast and Furious that cost not only thousands of Mexican lives, but United States lives? I mean, how many times have they sued him for having government agencies openly break the law? It truly is mind-numbing. It honestly makes me feel like I'm eating crazy pills when you consider that the GOP, when the president flat out tells things like Border Patrol to stand down and not enforce the law or openly break the law, they say nothing about it, or they might pound their fists on a on a daily pundit show, but they'll never do anything. But Donald Trump simply saying, let's figure out who's coming in this country before we allow just any Tom, Dick, or Harry to show up on our shores. They're going to sue him, and they're going to try and skunk his presidential election. I mean, it really goes to show where their true loyalties are.
Well, yeah, and if I may belabor the point a little bit about all this suing business, the first that I remember hearing about it, at least recently, was when Ted Cruz was talking about raising some kind of a fund to sue Obama and all this back before he started talking about being president. And remember, Ted Cruz, like Barack Obama, is a constitutional scholar. But when did all this it's just the most ridiculous, cowardly, Jewish sounding tactic. Because that's not what you do as members of Congress and the Senate when the president violates the Constitution. When the president violates the Constitution or commits a crime or brings dishonor to the office of the presidency, what you do is you have impeachment hearings. And if the impeachment hearings, if they vote to impeach the president, then if what he did was bad enough, then you vote to remove him. All this suing is just a waste. If it ever were to happen, it's just a waste of time, and it's a waste of money, and it's a political tactic. And if people had their eyes on the ball and understood how things are supposed to work, they'd realize it's crass marketing is all it is. And it's cowardly because, you know, you send these guys to Congress to enforce the Constitution and represent your interests, and they have a system in place to take care of this kind of thing. And the only time in my lifetime that it ever was used was a couple of times. Once because a president deleted a couple of minutes off some tape, and then another time because he lied about cheating on his wife. And I mean, the things that Barack Obama has done, and to be fair, the things that George Bush did, I mean, all the extra constitutional powers. Look, a couple of weeks ago, Obama signed an executive order that every school system in the United States had to allow trannies to go in the girls' bathroom. And that, if that is not an overreach, I don't know what is.
Well, it is kind of amazing to just consider that, you know, our ancestors were willing to literally die, like freeze to death at Valley Forge, to be blown apart by musket and cannon fire, to die of all sorts of horrible diseases over attacks on tea and what it represented to not be able to have. Of course, there were more things to it, but the idea of not feeling like your interests were being represented by your system. I mean, you look at the Confederate cause, the fact that our Southern ancestors saw they simply feared what was going to come with the Lincoln administration. They knew what was going to come. They knew the destruction of states' rights. They knew the march of the federal empire was coming, which, of course, it did. So they were willing to break union over the fact that they simply saw the storm was coming, and they were trying to get out of the way of it, of this federal overreach. But here we are now. I mean, it seems to me, especially the states, that for all the things I love about Governor George Wallace, the second he moved out of the schoolhouse door is almost the moment that any sort of opposition to the federal government effectively ended. Like, at that moment, if Governor Wallace had refused to move and ordered Alabama state troopers to arrest the federal representatives and kick them out over the border or something like that, then we would have something to talk about, because I don't think the feds would have been willing to get in a shooting war with the entire South over forced desegregation and other federal overreaches on housing policy and stuff like that. But as soon as Governor Wallace, who had the support of his people behind him, the South was looking to him, the Midwest was looking to him, all these places were waiting for him to be the hero, to be able to stand in the schoolhouse door and not move. When he went into, well, we're going to sue the federal government, we're going to engage in these backhand tactics instead of standing strong with some iron in your spine and refusing to move, I really think effectively that's when any real resistance to the federal government, Republican or Democrat, really ended, because at that point he could have won that fight, and it would have at least been a fight worth fighting. But he decided that he was gonna step out of the way, and effectively, I feel like that's made everything really within the mainstream political establishment incapable, or at least unwilling, to really stand up to the feds. I mean, even as you pointed as how quickly things went downhill, I mean, the fact that we now live in a government and an Orwellian superstate, that we know that every text message, phone call, this conversation that we might have offline, anything we do is being categorized and cataloged by the federal government. They're watching all of us all the time. It's no longer a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. They have truly created a police state, and we do nothing about it. Nixon deletes a few minutes of tape, and that's a huge problem. Hillary Clinton deletes 30,000 emails, and there's nothing. And we both Republicans and Democrats support the National Defense Authorization Act, which includes indefinite detention for U.S. citizens who haven't been convicted of a crime if they're viewed as a threat to the nation. This police state. I mean, what happened to us? I mean, from Valley Forge and Fredericksburg to now, it's absolutely amazing what has happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, and if you look at it just from the perspective of the South, the Civil War didn't break us. The Reconstruction didn't break us. But what finally broke us was, I don't think we're broken, but what has brought us down to the level that we are now, not only, on a mental and spiritual level, but on a, not having any political power or any of that, has been 5 decades of propaganda. And that's what's done it. I mean, they couldn't, these kind of things always remind me of the anti-racist Hitler cartoon, because the moral of the story of the anti-racist Hitler cartoon is that, a program of, anti-white propaganda and mass immigration works better than gas chambers, right? That's the moral of it. If you want to destroy somebody, you do it by going after their psyche and mass immigration. And that's how all these things have seemed to work out. It's like, as long as we had straight on conflict, as long as you could see who the enemy was, whites were always able to organize and oppose and defeat that enemy. And we are now faced with the worst, most dangerous challenge that we ever had, because the enemy doesn't present itself as an enemy, and it doesn't show up wearing its armor ready for battle. The enemy whines, and the enemy tells you you've been mean to it. And somehow, as a group, we have been very susceptible to this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really just hits in, you know, our ancestors were willing. Whenever I think of sacrifice, I think of the monument at the South Carolina State House to the women of the South, you know, who, as she's sitting there with an angel putting, you know, a wreath of glory, you know, I guess like a queen's thing on her head. And it's such a noble and beautiful image, you know, and the inscription is absolutely will bring tears to your eyes about how our women at home are willing to suffer every deprivation for the sake of the war effort, for the sake of their families, for the sake of their children, their grandchildren, and how we need to honor them. And then when we see our Confederate veterans and their statues, we feel something. And these were men that, you know, many of whom were poorer than we could ever imagine, but they were willing to give up everything. What very little they had, they were willing to give up everything when the enemy was coming. I mean, you know, Stonewall Jackson with the famous black flag comment that as soon as the Yankees step foot over the border, that we need to be able to fight for the very survival of our entire way of life. But it's just amazing with the subversion. I mean, that's, you know, and of course the Jews, as the saying goes, the Jew cries out as he strikes you. And that's exactly what they've been doing since since World War One. I mean, where they were talking about Jewish persecution that didn't happen. And then, of course, you know, we've got the Second World War and the last 71 years of this incessant propaganda that is they're the ones that are pushing for this mass immigration. They're the ones pushing for homosexuality, feminism, abortion. I mean, really just everything. Even the, you know, the bro culture where guys are taught that they just have to have as many sexual partners, never get married, never have kids. Women are told have as many sexual partners as they want, you know, with radical feminism. They should never get married, have kids. It's a genocide on so many fronts. I feel like I've got like a 20-sided Dungeons and Dragons die in front of me. And if you just would turn each side of the die, there'd be another Jewish policy towards destroying our people through subversion. But the entire time they've been crying out. They've been crying out for 71 years now about how we're the ones persecuting them and how we owe them and how they're the victims, as they're the ones who are working to literally destroy our faith, our family, and our folk. They there are no brakes on their train to try and destroy us, but they play the victim every time.
Well, absolutely. And but the thing about it is, and it sounds easy, but as you know, it's one of the hardest things that anybody, you know, who sits down in front of a microphone and talks or writes on a blog can ever try to do. The only thing we have to do to save our people and to turn this whole thing around is to get enough of us to notice the pattern, because once they notice the pattern, they can never unsee it, whether they wanted to or not. But that's the hard thing, because like you said, it's coming from at you from so many different directions, and it's been internalized by every tier of society. I mean, you've got your self-hating whites, you've got you know, all the other minorities that have absorbed all this propaganda about slavery and colonialism and all that, and then you have the religious front where, which I talked about a lot on today's Hidden Mysteries that's going to come out here on Radio Aryan. But, you know, you've got the religious aspect of it where over the last few decades, this whole evangelicals must worship the Jews type thing has really taken off. And boy, you talk about something hard to break through. You can take these people, and I mean, like the Southern Baptist Convention is probably the worst one now, and that's the church I was raised in. When I was a small child, there was none of this Jew worshiping, and there was none of this, well, we're not going to go along with what the Bible says because it's not trendy anymore. But now you look.
Well, and even taking down, they just voted on telling their members not to fly the Confederate flag.
Right, right.
All the Confederate flags in the world is not worth one soul. And, you know, going against so many biblical principles of the idea of honoring your ancestors and holding to tradition, all these things. I mean, the Southern Baptists are literally, when they were fighting desegregation 50 years ago, when they were supporting slavery 155 years ago, now we're saying that we can't even honor our ancestors who gave their lives for their homeland. I mean, if you want to talk about cuck, the SBC is one of the worst.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, when I was a kid, they were one of the best, you know, and of course it's been a long time since I was a kid, but, one of the main reason that they gave for, discouraging their members from displaying the Confederate battle flag was that it was a symbol of slavery. Well, if the Confederate battle flag is a symbol of slavery because it flew over the Confederacy, then what kind of things are the American flag a symbol of? I guess the American flag is a symbol of infanticide since it flew over the Supreme Court when they decided Roe versus Wade. I guess the American flag is a symbol of sodomite marriage, since it flew over the White House when and the Supreme Court when all that was decided, right? And I guess the American flag is a symbol of trannies going into the women's bathroom because that was flying over the White House when Obama pinned that thing. And, I mean, I can just go on and on and on with things that should really have evangelicals or any Christians – or even just anybody with some common sense, so upset that they wouldn't be able to focus on anything else. But you've got these bull preppers at the Southern Baptist Convention crying about these alleged sins of their evil ancestors. I mean, come on.
Well, and it just hits on such this clear notion of, again, I mean, I hate to draw everything back to Orwell, but just doublethink. I mean, you know, I just saw this morning that 51 diplomats and lawmakers now are telling us that, ISIS is being rolled back, so now it's time to bomb the Assad regime. And you know, this warmongering against a man that protects the Christian minority of his country, that the Christians are behind lock, stock, and barrel because he protects their right to worship. He protects their ability to have their own communities and things like that. But we've got to get, you know, a majority of these evangelicals and stuff like that are saying we've got to bomb him because somehow Assad's the bad guy when we should be standing with Assad. I mean, if you just look at this Orwellian doublethink that enters in, especially to American conservatism and American low church Protestantism in the mega churches and the evangelical sects. I mean, you cannot, to me, look at, for instance, in Israel, where, you know, I've known Orthodox priests that went to the Holy Land who were spit on, who were beaten by IDF soldiers trying to go through checkpoints, who were blocked from being able to go in, to go from Palestine into, like, the Tomb of the Holy Sepulchre, to be able to do liturgies and things like that. And the Jews do everything they can to oppress Christians and to be just absolutely horrible to them on the streets. I mean, monks have been killed, priests have been killed in the Holy Land, churches have been vandalized, and the Israeli government does nothing. All this stuff on how the Jews just in the Holy Land persecute Christians. And then look at a man like Assad that defends Christians, that goes out and defends Christian Hezbollah, that, you know, has declared as part of their manifesto that for the Israeli crimes done against both Muslims and Christians, and, you know, the majority of Christians support Hezbollah. They're arming Christian militias to defend their communities. Everything about them says that as a Christian, those are the guys I should be supporting. But in this Orwellian doublethink, we support the regime that's actually killing Christians, not defending Christians, but killing them, actually persecuting them. I mean, if that doesn't show how confused these people are. So here in the United States, to hate a symbol of a nation and a people that was God-fearing. I mean, when Stonewall Jackson would, you know, beat his men if he caught them drunk or cursing or things like that, compare that now to the top civilian position in the U.S. Army is a sodomite. If that doesn't tell you that something has changed, but here we are in this bizarro situation where everything good is bad and everything bad is good, where there's just a total disconnect from reality.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, you know, like the head of the military being a sodomite, I believe that was pretty much the main qualification. We've seen that going on for years now. You know, we've got to, I mean, it's like in the 70s, it was like we have to help the blacks. And so that's when you'd start seeing these blacks getting promoted to positions for no reason other than they're black. And then it's the women, you know, and that now it's the gays and the trans and all that. And, it's just, Alice in Wonderland. We're through the looking glass. Quality doesn't matter. And the very people who call us racists and sexists and homophobes and misogynists and all, no one judges people based on race and sexual orientation and all more than they do. But theirs is very simple. If you're white, straight, male, bad. Anything else? Good. You know, there's no content of character or any of that nonsense to it.
Well, you know, I actually met a guy who was a former communist. He was involved in the anti-fascist scene back in the, you know, in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. And the reason his politics have changed since then, but the reason he got out of it is even in like the mid 2000s, they started talking about toxic masculinity, and he, you know, worked out and things like that, and tried to live healthy, and you know, he ate meat and stuff like that. He just hated racism and fascism, but that wasn't good enough. Like, you know, he was willing to go out and literally beat down nationalists and attack nationalists and commit crimes for the cause, but his toxic masculinity got him forced out of his anti-fascist crew because he worked out too much and he was straight and you know, he actually had a job, he was working class. If that doesn't go to show that there's nothing you can do to be a good goy, that the system, there is no place for us if we just, you know, bow to the party line and we're just going to go along with it, and chicks with dicks can go into the bathroom with my wife, and like, my son needs to be fed like propaganda about how his people are evil and everything. There's no point where they accept us. Even if we're willing to be the useful idiots for the anti-white establishment, they still hate us. You know, no one likes traitors. If you look at the traitors in the American Revolution, of which there were a few that left the colonist side and went over to the British, most of them all died in poverty because they were never then a part of the British establishment. They were never respected. They were used temporarily, in the war effort, but then they were cast aside to live in the gutter until the day they died. And that's kind of how it is for white anti-whites. There's no long-term place for you in that system. They will use your money and your time and your face on camera and even your fists to try and attack whites that don't want to accept demographic and cultural displacement. But as soon as they have the opportunity, they're going to throw you to the wolves. And that's something that I've seen. I mean, a large number of our guys in the party are former leftists because, you know, they were socialists or things like that. And then they realize that the organized left doesn't actually care about working class issues. They don't care about stopping globalization. They don't care about any of that. They care more about with dicks and kids' bathrooms and homosexuality and destroying Christianity and the patriarchy, and that's just the way they roll.
Yeah, it is. And it's an old point that we bring up all the time, but unless you hate yourself, these people, and hate your people with a passion as a white person, these people are going to call you a Nazi no matter what. I mean, even if you say something like, well, you know, maybe we should just check and not allow mass murderers to immigrate from Mexico or the Middle East, just the mass murderers. And they'll scream, you racist Nazi KKK. They're just trying to get a better life. And, you know, it's the system.
You're literally Hitler. Like that's the speed. Yeah. It's either you are literally Hitler.
right. There's absolutely everything flipped on its head. We're not supposed to care what happens to our own people. We're supposed to bring the predators in because the poor predators, I mean, look at what they've done to their country. Surely they have a right to come do it to ours. But the system has no place in it for us. And so we're presented with two options, basically. We either have to take control of the system or, as a group, remove ourselves from it. Because I don't think the system as it stands is redeemable, you know.
No, there's no chance of reform, nor could there be. I mean, when you really look at it, I mean, how could we reform it? With judicial review being able to throw out any ballot measure or law we might pass, if even we want to defend our churches, just the right of our churches to protect the sanctity of marriage, if homosexuality is a civil right, then they're going to be mandating churches at gunpoint here before too long to force to do that. If we want to stop the murder of over 3,000 unborn babies a day, that's constitutional. There's nothing we can do about it. The highest court in the land has ruled. We need to get off the USS Titanic and to be able to go our own way, or else we're just going to be stuck with this, because there's no place for us in society. And just like the initial pioneers that settled the new world, we need to be pioneers to be able to build a new nation. Because if we don't do that, we're just going to go down with the ship. So we've come to the end of our show, and it's the last show of the this week. So Asmodor, give me a great final thought for us to roll into the weekend with.
Secede.
I love it. I could not say it better. That one word right there, brothers and sisters, is literally what we need. You know, as Harold Covington famously said, if white people had a country of our own, this wouldn't be happening. If you want to talk about black-on-white crime, abortion, homosexuality, radical feminism, whatever the issue is, if white people had a country of our own, this wouldn't be happening. So, Asmodor, thank you so much for being here, my friend. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm going to look forward to hearing your show later today on Radio Aryan and being able to have you on as a co-host next week. So thank you again. And thank you to all my listeners for another wonderful week of The Daily Traditionalist. Love doing it. Love being here. And thanks again to Sven, as always, for all the hard work he does with Radio Aryan. So thank you, guys. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Spend some time with your families. Celebrate your fathers. You know, don't forget them on Father's Day. And we'll see you here on Monday. So thank you, guys. God bless and hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at Radio Aryan.com.